Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, October 22nd, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, no Kings protest occurs in Eureka, McKinleyville Town Center ordinance is approved, and harmful algae blooms advisory lifted for Humboldt County. So stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
This past weekend on October 18th, one of the many No Kings protests occurring across the country happened in Eureka, starting outside of the Eureka North Coast Co-op and ending outside of the Eureka Courthouse. The No Kings protest is one of a series of demonstrations that have been occurring across the United States, and also internationally, in protest of the current Trump administration. The protests specifically criticize authoritarian-esque policies such as ICE raids and the National Guard deployment in major cities that have increased since the beginning of the administration. KMUD reporter Julian Jackson joined us covering the protest as we spoke to protesters and protest safety marshals about their beliefs and perspectives on the administration and its policies.
Well, my name is Annette Dobton and moved here from North Carolina. And my outfit is, I'm Groovy Ben Franklin. I'm here because it's important to, you know, this is what democracy is about. Expressing yourself, letting the government know that we're not putting up with their BS. And this is like one of the most American things that you can possibly do. That's why I'm here.
That was protesters Annette Dobston, who arrived at the protest dressed as a 70s Benjamin Franklin, chanting with other protesters. Despite being from North Carolina, they share a common history of activism in their family, much like the history of Humboldt itself.
It's one of those things, if we don't work it now, we're going to lose it. So that's why I'm here. For you, for young people like you, and young people like my great niece and my great nephew, they're, you know, she's four and he is a newborn, and I want them to have a good country to grow up in.
Protesters from all backgrounds were in attendance, ranging from Veterans for Peace to Centro de Pueblo, in outfits ranging from inflatable dinosaur costumes to the Handmaid's Tale dresses. We spoke to Leslie Esther, a protester in attendance and a nurse representative for the California Nurses Association, about her perspective on the administration's effect on public health.
Public health, nurses, you know, that's our bottom line here is public health. And to see a government that is actively slashing grants for health care. So, you know, nurses are really worried that the government is slashing like grants for research, cancer research, vaccine research. In addition to that, this is a very anti-vaccination. The reason we here in Humboldt County actually have fewer and fewer pediatric patients in our hospitals is because vaccines work. We don't have people, kids with measles anymore. We don't have kids with whooping cough anymore. And so to have a government that's coming, they're trying to be anti-vaccine, actively puts our community at risk.
Along the protest route, tables with water and snacks were set up, as well as a table made out of recycled materials to create signs out of the same kinds of materials.
My name is Viva McNavishus. I live up in McKinleyville, and I never find the time to make a sign, and I know that other people don't too, so my friend and I got together. We built a table out of recycled materials. We brought some cardboard, and we brought paint and Sharpies and implements of cutting so that people could make their own signs to carry in the protest. More signs, more messages. Health care for all, protecting our immigrants, defending democracy, and getting some crazy people out of the White House and out of the cabinet.
Also on the protest route were safety marshals that directed the crowds and made sure that the protesters didn't get in the way of oncoming traffic. One of the safety marshals, named MC, emphasized the importance of having these marshals and medics in attendance at protest demonstrations like this.
Oh, I love the safety groups. I'm so glad that we actually do have them up here. It is very crucial and important for us to have safety marshals at the protest. We also had a medic as well. We had a medic table off of, I want to say, 5th and I. It's important to have these groups there so that we can monitor what's going on throughout the crowd. I want to say we had about like 12 people, which was not enough for this size. But we were going up and down and making sure that people were staying on the sidewalk, staying safe and out of the road. We did have some stragglers in front of the courthouse, but they were okay for the most part. But we also communicated through our walkie-talkies to make sure that any potential threats were being communicated with one another. And also our safety group was in contact with the Eureka PD, so that we can go ahead and alert them if there were any things going on, like, threat-wise. Fortunately for us, we only had maybe about 6 naysayers throughout the entire time that I was present, but it is important for us to have these safety people present at these protests so that we can ensure the safety and the well execution of a protest and people executing their First Amendment right.
Amongst the protesters was a real visual representation of Humboldt County. Elders, children, college students, high schoolers, people from all walks of life were in attendance at this protest, continuing the long history of Humboldt's protest culture in the face of heated political climates. The protest itself was peaceful and relatively contained, and few dissenters arrived. Most just drove past and shouted in counter-protest. Listen to KMUN News for more coverage on demonstrations like these in the future. After 6 years of work, the McKinleyville Town Center Ordinance was finally approved by the Humboldt County Board of Supervisors. Daniel Mintz reports.
The McKinleyville Town Center Ordinance, one of Humboldt County's most formidable planning efforts, is now approved after 6 years of contentious work. Though it didn't gain a unanimous vote at the October 20th Board of Supervisors meeting, the rezoning ordinance was described by a majority of supervisors as transformational and community building. The ordinance applies mixed-use zoning to create a viable town center, moving away from the suburban-style strip mall design that shaped McKinleyville during a building boom in the 1990s. But a key aspect of it is disputed. Narrowing the section of Central Avenue that runs through the town center area from 4 main auto lanes to 2. The so-called road diet was the most debated topic during a lengthy public comment period. Mary Burke, chair of the McKinleyville Municipal Advisory Committee, which played a key role in fielding community input, acknowledged the division over Central Avenue and vouched for something the County Planning Commission asked for in its approval of the plan, a comprehensive traffic study to better gauge the road diet's impacts.
I think the hope and the vision here with the ordinance is that our community have a more abundant, diverse, accessible housing, a modern town center that creates an environment for all people, a safe and healthy environment for all people. And we think, or the Mi'kmaq bring this before you, believing this ordinance is closer to realizing that vision. But you hear the divergent views, right, on Central Avenue planning. And again, I think where we can come together is around this idea of really needing that comprehensive study, not just for circulation, but for multimodal access.
There was support among supervisors for thinning Central Avenue. Supervisor Natalie Arroyo said she supports the plan as, quote, youth getting to school is very much at the top of mind for me. But Supervisor Rex Bone said he's, quote, having a hard time with the road diet. He said it will be expensive, seeks to force us out of cars, and will create a total mess. Planning Director John Ford tried to anchor the discussion, saying Central Avenue's road diet is a future vision without a timetable.
There is no timing on that. It really is dependent upon financing. And as I mentioned in my response to Supervisor Bone, that is going to have to be funded by other than development, because that will be an expensive process to undertake. And so there's not currently financing for it. There's not a timeline on that. So the town center can begin to develop without the road diet occurring. And that's part of the decision on the part of the Board of Supervisors today, is whether or not, as you've been asked several times, to defer the decision on the road diet.
McKinleyville is in Supervisor Steve Madrone's district, and he flatly stated that, quote, Central Avenue is not safe, as is, adding, maybe it's safe for cars, but not for pedestrians. He agreed with the Planning Commission recommendation to widen the scope of traffic study.
Whatever we do with Central Avenue, whatever that looks like in terms of traffic calming details, this will not happen overnight. It took us 19 years to get to the town center ordinance. But if we don't include it as part of the ordinance, which it is right now, it could waylay it for years and years and years. So I want it to be included as my motion suggested, but I want to be sure that we are, as a community, taking the time to look at that full circulation plan and coordinate that with MCMAC and the CSD and the community. So whatever we ultimately come up with, which will be several years down the line, because it takes time to do those things, it's going to take funding, as was mentioned.
Madrone's motion to approve the ordinance and its environmental impact report included a directive to do the traffic study, but other supervisors had concerns about delaying the plan's implementation, and Madrone agreed to shear the study from the motion. Part of the reason for doing so is the state's movement towards studying development of an interchange at Hiller Road and Highway 101, which will include analysis of greater traffic patterns. After kicking around the traffic questions for a while, supervisors settled on a motion approving the plan minus the traffic study and bringing back the Hiller Road project discussion later. Bringing years of work and debate to a milestone conclusion, supervisors voted 4-1 to approve the town center plan, with Bone casting the dissent vote. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
On October 9th, Humboldt County Department of Health and Human Services Division of Environmental Health provided an end-of-the-season recap of harmful algae bloom, HAB, activity from this season. The report notes that activity was relatively low, and according to data largely collected by the North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, recreational waters in Humboldt County had 8 reported HAB incidents between late July and mid-September. KMUD News spoke with Patrick Higgins, Managing Director for the Eel River Recovery Project, for more information about how algae blooms form for the Eel River specifically.
The cyanobacteria, or toxic algae blooms, in the Eel River generally at their height during the warmest time of the year, because cyanobacteria flourish in warm water conditions. And the Recovery Project studied the situation in the Eel from 2013 to 2017. People can go to eelriverrecovery.org and check the results of that. What we found is that cyanobacteria, the principal toxic algae species in the Eel, is Anabina, and it creates something called anatoxin, which is a neurotoxin which can kill dogs or people. And it's generally at the height of the summer when this condition develops, but it may persist later in the year as the algae decays.
HABs have a lesser chance of occurring now that temperatures have lowered and has made it unfavorable for them to form. But it is still important to know how to identify this kind of algae blooms in the future. Non-harmful algae blooms typically are green and flowing, healthy-looking in nature, while harmful algae blooms can look brown, orange, yellow, or dark green, and like scum at the edges of rivers. Higgins elaborates on how to identify these HABs.
I think Humboldt County Department of Public Health monitors the Eel River in conjunction with the North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board. And I think that they basically go with a detect, non-detect. So if you can detect toxins, then they put out advisories. Common sense thing for people is don't go into the river where there's scums at the edge particularly. And I would advise caution when swimming in late season. If you see foam on the water, that's kind of a sign of stagnation, which can also lead to a proliferation of the cyanobacteria and their toxins, but also like swimmer's itch, which can be at levels that are nuisance levels. And, you know, for now, I would say toxic algae season is over. It doesn't mean that it's still not persistent, but then there's the water's no longer warm. There isn't that much recreation. The cyanobacteria are senescing and dying. And with each of these systems that we've had come through, where the river only rises slightly, but it tends to expel things and move them downstream. So really, I don't think that there's a present problem, and general warning period would be from July 15th to September 15th.
While the season for HABs is over, it doesn't mean that they are 100% done occurring. stagnant water can lead to harmful algae proliferation even in the later months of the year. The DHHS encourages people recreating near bodies of water to report any large harmful algae blooms to HAB experts, either by email at cyanohabreports@waterboards.ca.gov, that's cyanohab.reports@waterboards.ca.gov, or to call 844-729-6466. Photos of suspected blooms can also be emailed to envhealth@co.humble.ca.us. That's envhealth@co.humble.ca.us. For more information on cyanobacteria and harmful algae blooms on the South Fork Eel River, the website is eelriverrecovery.org/algae. That's eelriverrecovery.org/algae. Turning to Mendocino, Mendocino Board of Supervisors assesses risks involved with separating auditor controller and treasurer tax collector. Mendo Local News' Elise Cox reports.
The Mendocino County Board of Supervisors agreed on Tuesday to look at the risks that would be associated with separating the offices of the auditor controller and the treasurer tax collector. I'm Elise Cox, reporting for KMUD News and MendoLocal.news. Supervisor Bernie Norvell of District 4, which includes Fort Bragg, proposed the risk analysis after Shamise Cubison, the current auditor controller and treasurer tax collector, appealed to the board to take action.
Good morning, Chair Hashtag, members of the board. Shamise Cubison, auditor controller, treasurer tax collector. It remains my professional opinion that the offices of the auditor controller, treasurer tax collector should be independent offices elected by the people.
Cubison said physical officers across California share the belief that the two positions should be independent elected offices.
Over the last couple of years, I've had the opportunity to attend the conferences of the California State Association of County Auditors, as well as the California Association of Treasurer Tax Collectors and their regional meetings, as well as be a part of their online forums. And those members all agree with the separation of those offices.
The two offices were merged in Mendocino County under an ordinance adopted in 2021. Cubison urged supervisors to reverse that decision before the next election in 2026.
I'm here today to make it known to the board and the public that I fully support and request this board take the necessary steps to repeal the ordinance that was enacted in 2021, which combined the offices of the auditor, controller, treasurer, tax collector, and to call for an election in 2026 for the elected separate independent offices of the auditor, controller, and treasurer tax. You will not be alone in taking these steps. I want to make sure you're aware that Lassen County recently did take these steps. They had consolidated their offices, and in April of 2024, they did pass such a repealing ordinance in order to separate those offices and call for an election in 2026 of separate offices before the voters.
She said the board would need to act before the end of the year for the measure to qualify in time.
It is my understanding that in order for this to take place, you will need to pass a new ordinance, which will require two board meetings, and these actions must take place before the end of the calendar year in order for those offices to be separated in time for the next election. So I implore you to please take this action as soon as possible and have an item come back before you in November and December.
Supervisor Bernie Norvell professed his support, but then he added that he was not sure an ordinance could be passed by the board in time for the 2026 election.
So first of all, I support that idea. And my only concern is the timeline, and CEO, maybe you can help me here, but I believe when the offices were consolidated, it was pointed out that the board didn't take the necessary steps of, I might have the term wrong, but it was a risk analysis. So before moving forward with that, I think it would be prudent to try and get that done instead of making the same mistake twice. I would be happy to, if the chair so sees, work on an ad hoc committee to see if we can get that done and get it done in a timely manner.
Board Chair John Haschek agreed to form an ad hoc committee with Norvell to prepare that analysis. The ad hoc will review potential risks and bring that back to the board for discussion. Mendo Local has requested that the risk analysis include the risk of maintaining the two offices as a single entity, including the risks to effective oversight. We also asked the Board of Supervisors to make public guidance that's been provided to the board and to the auditor on the spending of the asset forfeiture fund. The County Council denied a public records request by Mendo Local, citing attorney-client privilege with elected members of the Board of Supervisors. Not making public the guidance makes it hard for the public to exercise its role in evaluating the performance of elected officials such as the supervisors, the district attorney, and the auditor controller. During public comment, speakers from across the county backed Cubison's request. Carrie Vaugh is chair of the group Mendo Matters.
I'm Carrie Vaugh, and I do want to speak. As a citizen of this community, a business owner, and a taxpayer, I urge you to support separating the tax collector auditor's office. This, I think, is just common sense, in my opinion, of transparency. You also have had the State of California Controller's Office that did an audit on you that suggested that this happen. I'd like to bring that back to your attention. Also, you've had the grand jury that has also suggested that this could help you with having issues that arise, including the transparency that's needed.
Julie Golden, chair of the Hopland Municipal Advisory Council, urged immediate action.
I strongly encourage you as a board to repeal the decision you made in 2021. The elected officials like the treasurer and tax collector and auditor in our county government provide a layer of independence and direct public accountability that we deserve, and they should be separate offices. The elected structure promotes checks and balances, reducing the risk of undue influence from the county executives or board of supervisors, as well as fostering democratic accountability in our financial roles. I understand time is of the essence, Supervisor Hashak, and I really believe action needs to be taken before the end of this year.
And Estelle Clifton, president of the Board of Directors of the Farm Bureau, said the merger weakened accountability, while Adam Gaska, executive director of the Farm Bureau, reiterated the request for timely action.
I just wanted to reiterate Mendocino County Farm Bureau's support of separating the two offices back into two elected offices, and really urge you to move forward with a recommendation by acting auditor, controller, treasurer, tax collector, and as soon as is legally possible to bring this measure forward and return the offices to being elected offices.
For KMUD News and MendoLocal.News, I'm Elise Cox.
In state news, California transgender nonprofit nominated for Community Service Award, Public News Service's Suzanne Potter reports.
In an era marked by attacks on transgender rights, a prominent California nonprofit that advocates for the trans community has been nominated for a Community Service Award. The West Hollywood Chamber of Commerce nominated the nonprofit Trans Can Work for the Creative Community Service Award, which recognizes businesses that give back to the community. Trans Can Work helps companies hire qualified gender nonconforming workers and offers access to things they might need to land a job, such as a laptop, cell phone, business attire, or bus pass. Genevieve Morrill is president and CEO of the West Hollywood Chamber of Commerce.
Particularly with what's happening right now with our federal government and LGBTQ communities and how they're being more marginalized than ever, we think that the work of Trans Can Work is really, really valuable.
Data from the Williams Institute at UCLA estimate that 2.8 million Americans aged 13 and up identify as transgender, and many have trouble getting hired despite their qualifications due to bias in the workplace. Tony Newman is board chair at Trans Can Work and the first transgender woman to receive an honorary doctorate in international law and legal studies from Azteca University. She says the Trump administration's vilification of transgender nonconforming people is unfair.
He has put a mark on our back to say these are not good people, and that's just untrue. We just want to work and live our life like every other American.
President Donald Trump has issued a number of anti-trans executive orders, including policies targeting transgender people in the military, limiting gender-affirming care for youth, and participation of transgender athletes in K-12 and college sports. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And in National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Hundreds of people remain displaced a week after the remnants of a typhoon wreaked havoc on some of Alaska's most remote and vulnerable communities. Reporter Emily Schwing has this update.
One of the hardest hit communities is Kipnuk, a village that sits in the heart of Alaska's Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Last week, tribal administrator Tristan Carl made the tough decision to mass evacuate his friends and family. Now he says they have several needs, including housing, clothing, and transportation, as well as access to foods that aren't found in conventional grocery stores.
I know we're going to be missing some our subsistence food. Hopefully some locals will be able to drop some off or even invite some families for some. And that's how we lived off for many, many, many centuries.
James Amick is also from Kipnuk. He, his friends and family are still reeling from the storm.
It's going to be in our minds for a while, you know. But the way I think we can get through that is if we talk like to our behavioral health and just get everything off of our mind. I think that would help us.
Alaska's governor declared a state disaster and has requested a federal disaster declaration from the Trump administration. Alaska's congressional delegation has also penned a letter to the president in support of a federal disaster declaration. In Anchorage, I'm Emily Schwing.
Meanwhile, when it comes to native co-management of fish and wildlife in the state, engagement and unity are key. That was the message at a panel about subsistence at the recent Alaska Federation of Natives convention. Ayolna Naiden with the Alaska Desk has more.
Representatives from several Alaska Native organizations called for a unified approach alongside government agencies to manage wildlife and fish when they met last week. Clinton Cook Sr. is the Craig Tribal Association president. He emphasized the importance of prioritizing Alaska Native voices when making decisions about wildlife.
Our people have always managed our lands. We know where the salmon run. We know where the deer are. We know when the clams are safe.
Cook says the first step is engagement. He encourages tribal residents to participate in advisory councils for both federal and state regulatory agencies.
So you have a voice in what happens in your region. That's huge.
A push for resource development in several Alaska regions has been met with opposition from some tribal groups. Karen Linnell is the executive director of the Atna Intertribal Resource Commission. She called for a composed and unified response in the middle of a quickly changing political environment.
With the current administration, the next couple years, we need to try to hold our ground with where we're at and not lose.
Representatives talked about funding challenges, lack of guidelines, and the need to re-educate regional directors when they change with the new administrations. Linnell says that one strategy that has made the difference over the years is collaborating with neighboring regions and figuring out how to continue practicing traditional ways of life without harming resources other regions rely on.
Wait a minute, you do duck calls, right? When you're out duck hunting, we call a moose in. So why is it different? When we started to support each other, we started to see change.
Promoting change also requires research, Linnell says. She hopes that more tribal organizations will have capacity to monitor wildlife and fish and collect their own data that they can trust. In Anchorage, I am Alona Naiden.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Julian Jackson, Suzanne Potter, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.